as you say, the neurodiversity movement is incredibly helpful in helping us realize that we are all different, and that, and there are lots of strengths from with people that are autistic in the same way that there are strengths for people that are neurotypical. So when you talk about disability, you have the medical model of disability and the social model of disability. And, you know, the medical model is like, you know, people that are different or disabled, they need to fit into society. Where the social model of disability is actually, you know, neurotypical people, society in general need to adapt and fit into the world of disabled people. It's a two-way process. It's not all on the whoever society says is disabled to try and fit into a neurotypical world. Let's understand each other better, and let's both adapt in the way that we talk to each other.
My name is Ruben, and welcome to the Underdog Way podcast, the show where I speak to people going against the grain and inspiring along the way. You'll hear different perspectives on a range of topics from people looking to elevate themselves and the world around them. Feel free to smash that subscribe button and leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help this show find new people. Now let's dive in. This is the Underdog Way podcast, season 2, episode 1. I'm joined by John Offord, who's a freelance producer, director and broadcaster, who also makes documentaries for BBC World Service Radio. John is the host of the Different Minds podcast series that explores neurodiversity and everything related to that topic. John unfortunately lost his brother through mental health challenges and has since embarked on this personal journey to educate himself and spread awareness and information of the differences that people have and the challenges that people who are neurodivergent face in an ableist society. We speak in depth about a range of topics, and I learn a lot from John, and I hope you enjoy this episode of us two talking about neurodiversity and all things related to that topic. Thank you very much.
I'm John Offord, so I'm a freelance producer. I'm from Sheffield in Yorkshire. I've always worked in media. I did a Mickey Mouse media degree 20 years ago now, when it was free to go to university. I got a grant to go to university back in the day. I did a media degree, and I was one of very few people that actually went on to work in the media afterwards. So I worked at Granada Television in Manchester on high quality programs like You've Been Framed and Stars in Their Eyes back in the day. And yeah, kind of that's where I kind of learned my my skills. And then I went to work at the BBC as a producer at Media City in Salford when that opened in 2012. And now I'm kind of got, I kind of moved into radio. So I switched platforms. So yeah, I'm from a working class background. I was the first one from my family to go to university. And yeah, kind of I enjoy speaking to people. Normally I'm interviewing people, so it's kind of it's weird being on the other end of the platform, but yeah, great to be here.
That's quite an interesting background, especially because your work is based in broadcasting sector. Did you feel that had it made sense to start the podcast and explore these concepts we talk about?
I enjoy speaking to people, and I've always been passionate about mental health as well. I actually lost my brother in 2013. He had a mental health condition, and I saw how that impacted all the family as well as my brother. And so yeah, I had quite a year in 2013. I lost my father and my brother at the same time. I was on a bit of a mission since then to kind of talk about, you know, our differences really, and to try and kind of help understand some of these conditions and break down the stigma. I have personal experience of living with someone on the autism spectrum, and it got me thinking about, the different ways that we all kind of interpret information, really, and process what is happening around us. And I became fascinated with it. I launched a Different Minds podcast series. And, you know, I myself describe myself as a neurotypical. But I don't, these are all labels, and it doesn't really matter, you know, whether, for me, labels are labels. However you describe yourself, you know, that's just a label. And for me, it was about kind of breaking that down and giving a platform for other people to talk about what is it like to have dyscalculia or dyslexia or Asperger's, and kind of just talking about it. And kind of, I think that's a great way of kind of understanding that we all interpret the world differently, and that's okay. And to not concentrate on deficits, but to concentrate on our strengths. And for me, it's been a massive learning journey, because I had my own, I don't want to be judgmental, but when I first launched my podcast, I was like, oh no, I'm about to interview someone on the autistic spectrum, you know, and kind of playing into all the stereotypes. And you know, I went on a learning journey myself, and to kind of think, well, actually, we're all people, and we've all got strengths. And hopefully with the listeners, people realize that we're all different, and we should celebrate our differences, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I completely understand as well, because from a personal perspective, I've been stuttering since the age of 4. Yep. And it was quite embarrassing, because in class or at work, if it was the first time we're speaking to people, then you have to introduce yourself and just be struggling just to say basic information, and just the looks you get from people and the questions on their face and the confusion. I saw that we were programmed to expect normal, but you see something different.
Yeah.
And just that reaction from the other side, that can actually be a bad experience for someone a bit different. It can have a big effect on your personality and the choices that you make in life, etc. I started doing the same thing, and just started speaking openly about the challenges I have with my speech, and bit by bit I've actually started to encourage a movement of other people doing the same thing as well, and it's just great now.
Brilliant. That's really inspirational to hear. And it's kind of like, it's only by talking about it that we break down some of those stigmas. And and you know, when I was interviewing Sienna Castellon, she kind of is working for the United Nations now. She's an advocate for autism, and she talked to me on a podcast about, you know, what it was like to get on the tube in London and she kind of dreaded getting on the tube every day, because it was so many people, there was so much noise. For her, that was a major kind of, you know, she really did worry about it. And just to hear that from her, you know, helped me understand what it might be like for an autistic person to kind of commute from A to B. And obviously no autistic person is the same, obviously. But just to hear, and it helps me sort of understand how people, you know, experience things differently, and that has to be a good thing, doesn't it? And I just find it's just by talking openly about things, we kind of demystify things, don't we?
Yeah, definitely. The other thing that I experienced, especially in the workplace, is I actually did a few talks at work, and then I ran workshops. The effect it had, from their perspective, they were listening to lived experience.
Absolutely. And that's so powerful, isn't it, to talk about it from your perspective. And we're all different, and we've all got strengths, and it's about understanding, isn't it, and be made aware of that. And I think it's really powerful, kind of what you're doing with your podcast. And it's great. It's great to hear.
In terms of a Different Minds podcast, maybe share a story about the start of the podcast, the concept, and then the growth of it as well?
I started my podcast last May as we were going through, I think it was the first lockdown now back in 2020. And I wanted to do a podcast about the different ways that we all experience the world. And within that, I've got celebrities, I've got doctors, I've got psychologists, I've just got ordinary people. And it's not about me, it's about other people having a platform to talk about what it is like to be them. It's been amazing. I mean, I've been so fortunate that I've had some extraordinary guests. I interviewed Chris Packham, obviously the English naturalist, photographer, television presenter. I interviewed a former Doctor Who star, Christopher Eccleston. He was talking about The A Word, which is a BBC One drama about autism. I interviewed Professor Simon Baron Cohen, who's kind of one of the world's leading authorities on autism. Steve Silberman, an American author, he wrote Neurotribes, The Legacy of Autism and the Future of Neurodiversity. I interviewed Judy Singer, who actually coined the phrase neurodiversity from Australia. Basically, one of the a banner for the greatest social movement to emerge from the 20th century. And I got to speak to Judy on my podcast. It was like, wow. I spoke to Francesca Harpe from London, who was involved in all those early studies of autism in the 90s and the 80s, like Theory of Mind. And she just talks about how fascinating the autism kind of mind is. And I really kind of, I get that passion myself, and I really connected with her. And I spoke to Dr. Radha Modgill from BBC Radio 1. She does the Radio 1 Life Hacks. She talked about kind of coping with lockdown, which I'm sure we all can relate to. I spoke to Adi Smith. He's a TV presenter on Amazon. He has Tourette syndrome. And we talked about some of the kind of the misconceptions around Tourette's as well. And he's incredibly open about that and doing some great work. I also spoke to some of my mates. One of my mates was recently diagnosed as autistic, and he was incredibly brave, and he shared that experience with me, and he was coming to terms with what that actually means. And you know, and you know, for him, it's just a label, and you know, and he's, you know, it's just, but it was so powerful that he was able to share that with me. But I think the most memorable podcast was the first one I did with an American student called Austin, and he talked to me about growing up with Asperger's, and he had some so powerful advice about kind of how we all should, you know, understand each other better. And that was the guy that I don't really like to say this, but maybe I wasn't quite sure how to take him to start with, because I'm thinking, this guy's got Asperger's syndrome, what's he going to be like with me on this podcast? So I you know, it sounds silly, like, of course everyone, I shouldn't judge people, but I guess I did have my own kind of preconceived ideas, and I kind of, I've learned a lot myself about not being so quick to have those ideas. And yeah, and actually, you know, they're all labels, and we're all different, and we should celebrate that. So for me and the listeners, hopefully this has been like a massive learning journey, and it's just I'm just so honored that I've had such amazing guests. And yeah, it's kind of, I'm hoping, who knows where it's going to go this year, but yeah, it's exciting times.
Just for the mix on the guest list and the message, just that last point you made just about the podcast being a learning experience. The cool thing is, our listeners can also be on that journey, witnessing that personal growth in you, and then growing as well.
Podcast grew immensely last year because obviously the more people are spending time at home and started consuming audio. And you know, this year is forecasted to be massive, the podcast market. So it's a really exciting time for us new podcasters out there. And who knows where that's going to go. And there's so many amazing podcasts out there, and it's just going to get better, I think. And really exciting time, definitely.
You think you've seen a trend then in the growth of these types of podcasts with people speaking about their differences and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So I write a lot of proposals for radio documentaries and podcasts and submit them to BBC Sounds. And I think definitely, what I like about the podcast market is it's not necessarily about celebrity culture. It's about real people. And, young people are going to podcasts because they want to learn something new. They want to discover something new. And, I think podcasts create that really piece of intimate audio where people can really learn about all sorts of subjects and even taboo subjects. And we can get a discussion going and nothing's off topic, basically. And I think, you don't have to have a polished radio program anymore. You can have a really informal discussion like you and I are doing now. And it's about authenticity, isn't it? It's real. And that's what I really think is going to, that's what young people are really connecting with. Yeah.
Do you think personally has been a shift in by the difference between podcasting and the established broadcasters and stations? And because I've seen in sports especially the podcasts are becoming the go-to now, like your True Geordies, Sky Sports and Dead the Beeb. They're still like a bit stuck in the old way,
absolutely,
in suits and just hit too polished.
It makes perfect sense. And the British media are probably 10 years behind America when it comes to podcasting.
Yeah.
But that is changing quickly. And there's, lots of investment now in podcasts, and there's lots of new distribution platforms like Audio Boom and Anchor FM. And so we're really seeing a massive change in that. But for me personally, for me, I still don't think there is any voice for the poor in traditional broadcasting. Mm-hmm. And, obviously I mentioned my working class background, and that's what excites me about podcasts, because it opens up the market and it allows people like you and I to have a voice. Mm-hmm. And that is massive. That is so huge and so exciting for me, because we don't often hear. I think we need to hear more diverse voices in the media. I think podcasts allow that to happen.
Personally, the closest station that I've seen that can do that is TalkSport.
That's exactly what a podcast are about, isn't it? Kind of a bunch of mates chatting. It is about the chemistry, isn't it, between the guests and the presenters. It's really informal. It's not polished, as you were saying. And that's what makes a good podcast. As you say, it's about the chemistry, isn't it? And I think, with my own experience working in traditional media, I've always had like an imposter syndrome, like working class guilt, that maybe I should be doing a proper job, like working as a plumber or an electrician, and I shouldn't be thinking about working in the media. But that's what podcasts are challenging, that status quo. It's very much, the media was a very closed shop that only kind of, elites were only involved in that secret club. And I think I think things are slowly changing now for the better. The BBC, for example, have opened up at Media City near Salford in Manchester. Everything used to be so London-centric that you had to have a silver spoon in your mouth if you worked in media. Whereas now I think that's opening up a bit, and it's a more level playing field, but I still think there's a bit of work to do still.
I've also seen a shift in the faces that you see on screen and the voices that you hear. But the big thing now is gender equality,
yeah,
and Sky Sports and BBC Sport. There's still yet to be that shift in the culture, but it starts at the top first.
Yeah, exactly. It starts on the top, and that's the thing. So the BBC have a new initiative to kind of focus on how to get more working class people into the business. And as you say, it starts on the top up. It starts from how, you know, the BBC and other media organizations recruit people into the business. And often with large companies, people recruit people that mirror them into the business. Whereas, you know, it needs to kind of be ingrained in every single aspect of, you know, how a business works. So we need people involved in recruitment that are also from working class backgrounds. Because as I say, people tend to recruit people that mirror them. And that's where we need to kind of tackle that initial recruitment phase. Yeah.
To the guests you had on the podcast, maybe share further learnings that you've taken.
Discovered so much about these topics and the way to deal with guests as well, and, you know, never to misquote a guest as well. And, you know, that's very important. Obviously, the ethics of it, you've got a duty of care as well. So some of my guests have had some, you know, one or two of them have like some kinds of personality disorders. And I want to make sure that everyone comes across in a good light. And sometimes things can be taken out of context when you have to edit something, and you'll know this yourself. And I feel like I've got a duty of care as a journalist to make sure that these people come across in the best way possible, and that I'm fair as a broadcaster. So when I quote something, you know, it could be, you could hear that quote and it could be out of context. So you need to hear the entire podcast for it to make sense. So I kind of have learned to make sure that, you know, I just want to make sure that my podcast is balanced, because, you know, at the end of the day, some of the people I've interviewed, you could say that they're quite vulnerable. And, you know, I have a duty of care to make sure that I'm doing the best for them. And, you know, once the podcast is released, it's out there in the ether forever, you know. And, you know, I want to make sure that what people talk about a lot of personal things on these podcasts. And I never want to, you know, sometimes I took the decision not to release a podcast once because I worried about how that might affect that person in the long term, because they wanted to work as a psychologist. And I just kind of, yeah, you have to think it through and think, is this a fair representation of that person and the condition that they're talking about? So you have a massive ethical responsibility as a producer to make sure that the podcasts are fair and balanced. And but, you know, my podcast is about people's I don't always have to have experts on my podcast. It's about people with lived experience of what it is to be like them, whatever condition they have. And, you know, there's no right or wrong answers, and some people might have a different opinion than others. I had a controversial guest on. So Simon Baron Cohen, you know, he's from Cambridge University. He's one of the world's leading authorities on autism, but he's quite a controversial figure. And a lot of autistic people take issue to what Simon Baron Cohen says about autistic people. So, but he's allowed to have his opinion, you know, and, you know, it's a fine line, but I, you know, I think Simon's done a lot of good work for the autistic community. A lot of people don't agree with some of the work that he does, and that's fine. You know, we're never all going to agree with each other. And, you know, my podcast isn't kind of like a Newsnight style where I, you know, hold people to account and give them a massive grilling. But at the same time, I will ask some questions. If I don't agree with what someone is saying, I'll try and challenge them in a nice way. You know, again, the history of autism, you know, Hans Asperger was around in the Second World War in Germany, you know, through when you had the Third Reich, the Nazi regime. And there's lots of controversy around Hans Asperger. And I spoke to Steve Silberman, the author of Neurotribes, and, you know, basically, you know, autism as we know it today, I guess you could say it was shaped in the Third Reich in Nazi Germany. And there's some kind of, there's lots of controversy there in some of the kind of early findings. And, I guess that, but it's okay to talk about it. And, you might not agree with what Simon Baron Cohen says or what, Judy Singer says about neurodiversity. People have got different opinions about neurodiversity. And that's okay, it's a platform for people to talk about their opinions about certain things. This is not all, it's not all facts, but we have to talk about things, right? Whether we agree with them or not.
Wow. I did not expect that, but wow. Just the shame and the embarrassment of being classed as a person who is disabled is quite big. I think I was first told in 2015, actually.
Yeah.
That stuttering, I was actually entered into a Disabilities Act in 2010.
Yeah.
And by definition, that made me disabled then. It took me some time to process that. By that point, I think I was 27 years old, to be classified now as a disabled person. But I had received that kind of information as a teenager, if it was framed in the wrong way, then I think it would have a big impact on the rest of my life and the attitude I had. Just the fact that there's a new word, that the framing of the word is different, that's a great thing.
100%. And as you say, there's a massive paradigm shift when it comes to language that we're using right now. And some people identify as autistic, some people identify as neurodivergent, some people identify as a neurominority. And actually, some people self-identify and self-diagnose themselves as certain conditions. And, they're all just labels, actually. And whatever you're comfortable, is completely up to you. I think, as you say, the neurodiversity movement is incredibly helpful in helping us realize that we are all different, and that, and there are lots of strengths with people that are autistic, in the same way that there are strengths for people that are neurotypical. But I don't think, we shouldn't be creating that us and them. I think we're all one human species, and we all kind of, we all interpret things differently, and that's okay. And actually, I think what you touch on a really interesting point, which is, and I'm going to try and describe this in a really simple way. So when you talk about disability, you have the medical model of disability and the social model of disability. And, the medical model is like, people that are different or disabled, they need to fit into society. Where the social model of disability is actually, neurotypical people, society in a general, need to adapt and fit into the world of disabled people. So, It's kind of like, actually, it's a two-way process. It's not all on the whoever society says is disabled to try and fit into a neurotypical world. It's about let's understand each other better, and let's both adapt in the way that we talk to each other. So, it's not, I think it's getting away from, like, that old-fashioned medical model to a more positive, progressive view of seeing each other, that it's not all down onto whoever we decide to call disabled to kind of fit into a normal world. It's a two-way process. It's a two-way street, if that makes sense.
The world is built for normal people.
Yeah.
It means that for so long, previous people had a different, they felt a bit lost, but then the fact is, there's a place now for us to be in the world, and it's a bit more accepting, and that's improving as well. And the tone of the language being used is changing.
Absolutely.
The world is a bit more now, a bit more adapted, being kind of a true self and authentic.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just thought of another example while you were saying that as well. And you look at like autism theory. So, what theories are out there to explain what autism is? And, again, we go back to some of the popular theories of autism that were developed by Simon Baron Cohen in the 80s, so like theory of mind. Where actually one of the most kind of accurate theories in my opinion that describes autism is monotropism, which was developed by Fergus Murray and Dina Murray, and that was actually developed by autistic people. After all, they probably got the best perspective on this. If we're going to develop autism theory, maybe we want to hear it from autistic people. And I think that shift is changing now, where we're kind of often it's very easy for kind of people that are neurotypical to kind of say, well, this is what this person needs. Well, actually, we're hearing more from the horse's mouth about their perspective on things. And another theory which is interesting is someone that I've interviewed called Damien Milton, a professor, an autistic professor, and he talks about the double empathy problem. Well, often in autism, you say that, oh, the autistic people always get the wrong end of the stick, because they're autistic. And actually he's saying, no, it's a two-way process. It's the neurotypicals misunderstanding what the autistic person means, as well as the autistic person perhaps not understanding what the neurotypical thinks. But that is a double empathy problem. That's on both sides. It's not the fault of the autistic person that they're misunderstanding the neurotypical. It's no one's fault, but it's a 50-50 problem, hence the phrase double empathy, because it's on both sides. Where I think in the old days, it was concentrating on, that person's disabled, that person has a disability, it's that autistic person's fault because they've misunderstood what that neurotypical means. Well, I think now we're realizing that it's 50-50 and it works both ways.
It ties back to a point I made about the rules of the world. They were written by normal people, but then now it's becoming important now to change the rules, really, and just see the perspective of the other types of people out there.
I think going back to kind of neurodiversity, a lot of my guests are kind of advocates for neurodiversity, and many of them are autistic and they are very articulate, and they have low support needs, so they're able to just like you and I are, be on Twitter and voice their opinions about neurodiversity, where I guess obviously you have the other end of the scale with autistic people with high support needs that are nonverbal. And they're not able to, speak for themselves, I guess. And, and obviously autism is a spectrum. So you have everyone on that same spectrum. And some people argue that, well, neurodiversity doesn't speak to me because my child is nonverbal and they have a real disability. And, they don't feel a part of the neurodiversity movement because, they can't speak, for one. And, at the other end of the scale, you have the, autistic people with low support needs that are very, active advocates that push this agenda that, we should be celebrating difference and that they are here and the world should listen to them. And there are some strong opinions on neurodiversity sometimes. I think it's important to say, at the minute, the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, that talks about the autism spectrum. And, it's still classed as a disability, according to DSM-5. But I guess that's just, we have to work to some structure. And, I spoke to Adam Feinstein recently. He wrote a book on the history of autism, and he talked about, you know, his son is nonverbal and autistic, and you know, he speaks very openly about neurodiversity, and he's very positive about it. But he also made the point, but you know, that let's not shy away from the fact that, you know, it's a disability, you know, that his son has, and that it's he needs to be diagnosed with autism to get the support that he needs. And you know, I think it's obviously it's a good thing, neurodiversity, and that we all should be celebrate our differences. But at the same time, I guess we need some kind of structure there to in order to be diagnosed in the first place. But then you could go into it further and say that the way that people are diagnosed with autism, is that actually working properly? And you know, and that's constantly being reviewed. And when I spoke to Francesca Harpe, she talked about subdivisions of autism being a thing in the future, and it's constantly evolving. And that's what I find so fascinating, that it is constantly evolving, and as our understanding gets better of certain conditions, then the way that we diagnose them is changing as well. But at the end of the day, they're just labels. You know, it's about human beings talking to each other. And in my opinion, they're all just labels. But sometimes that label, that diagnosis is helpful if you need support needs.
I experience the same thing at times, because I have my podcast and I speak a lot at places. That makes me a voice for stuttering. There are people out there that are scared stiff and they can't speak. They don't have the voice. That danger is people a bit like me pop up and speak and do podcasts and positive and great, but we still have to explain that it's serious, and for some people, the negativity and the suffering is real.
Exactly, absolutely. Which is why it's so important, as you say, that you're doing your podcast, because you have that lived experience, and you know, which is so powerful and inspirational for others to hear about. And yeah, 100%.
Just to end, a bit sad actually. I just wanted to ask you just personally about your plans for the podcast and a vision that you have for the next year and the years after, hopefully.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah, I guess I guess for me, you know, it's about hearing ordinary people's stories and kind of not really dictating the narrative. And you know, it's some of those powerful stories where people talk about what it is like to be them, what it is like to receive a diagnosis for the first time. Like you talked to me about earlier, how you felt when you were first diagnosed. And that's incredibly powerful to hear that firsthand, and to talk about it. It's such a personal thing. And that for me is what I want to concentrate on this year. So, you know, I want to continue with a mixture of mainly real people, but sometimes it's good to get some authors in there, some medical professionals, some celebrities. But for me, it's about real people telling their stories about what it is like to be them. And that's how we kind of break down some of these barriers. And, you know, yes, you know, I'm not autistic. I describe myself as neurotypical. I don't class myself to have a disability. But actually, you know, I know what it's like to be different. You know, I'm from a working class background. I struggled to fit in my life at certain times. And, you know, and to me, they're all, you know, labels. And I don't want to shy away from what you talked about, as in it's important that we hear about some of the struggles that people face on a daily basis. But it's only by talking about it. And I don't want to create an us and them either. I just want us, we're all just human beings and we're all different and we've all got our quirks. Some people have got more support needs than others. But yeah, I think it's only by talking about it openly is the way we're going to help break down some of this stigma. And, you know, I've still got a lot to learn myself. And, you know, but I don't want to sometimes I'm afraid to say the right thing and I have to be really careful with the language that I use. But then, you know, but I don't think that should be a barrier, because sometimes that can be a barrier for people having a conversation like you and I are doing now, because people are worried about offending people or using the wrong language. But you know, I think you can tell if the intent's there, where people, they don't want to offend you, they just want to educate themselves. And I think it's only by talking and actually listening, the power of listening is so underestimated. And so I want to listen as much as I can this year.
John, it's been an amazing speaking to you on the podcast.
Thank you.
About these topics, because our world is changing now.
Yep.
And it's the best time to actually speak about these differences, and bit by bit, it can break our stigmas and make the world a bit more of an inclusive place.
Yeah. Absolutely. I just feel honored to be in your podcast, Ruben, and thank you for asking me. And I really, really enjoyed speaking with you today.
The pleasure's mine, John. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for watching this episode of the Underdog Way podcast. Please feel free to leave any feedback on Apple Podcasts, and I look forward to sharing the next episode very soon. Keep an eye out on my Instagram and Twitter pages for episode updates. And until then, turn inspiration into action.